Good evening. I'm Dr. Elaine Schroeder. Welcome to Mind Over Matter, a monthly K2 radio show that explores issues of the heart as well as the mind. And in tonight's show, we'll explore the experiences that people have after leaving prison, what they experience in prison, and we'll look at what is being done to help them lead healthy lives and not return to jail. We'll also try to understand why some people end up in a revolving door situation and what services and policies are needed to help former prisoners lead lawful lives. And finally, tonight's guests and I will examine the controversy over recent criminal justice reform legislation that's going on in Alaska. I'm fortunate to have on my show tonight three very knowledgeable people. Kara Nelson and Ron Shriver are co-chairs of the Juno Reentry Coalition, and Terry Tibbett, who's also on the Reentry Coalition team. Welcome. Welcome, guys. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah,
that's great. Tell me what the Juno Reentry Coalition does, because you are volunteers on this steering team.
So this is Terry, and I guess I can give the brief overview that the Reentry Coalition, the Juno Reentry Coalition, is part of a network of coalitions around the state that are tasked with helping returning citizens, people who have been incarcerated, return to the community with supports and an easy transition that can help them be successful on the outside. Traditionally, it was discovered that through a whole bunch of research and looking around the country and in Alaska too, that the an average person being released from a prison didn't have any supports or very many supports to help them get on their feet. And it's been shown that people who don't have any kind of supports, they tend to recidivate. And with over 90% of the people that are incarcerated today being released at some point, people wiser than me had realized that it was a better strategy to try to help people get on their feet rather than just let them go out and flail and recidivate and come back to prison. So, and two-thirds of the people tend to come back to prison, are the numbers that we have. So, without the supports. So now the reentry coalitions around the state were some formed on a volunteer basis, some were formed with funding, but each one is doing their part to help increase access to housing, increase access to employment and training, education, mental health and substance abuse treatment, life skills training, family support, all kinds of community services to help people get on their feet so that they are less likely to commit more crimes in the future.
So there was probably some time in recent history when these services simply weren't available, and somebody walked out of jail in the cold, dark night and, I don't know, given a bus token, perhaps, and that was it?
Yeah, if that.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe not a bus token. We would hope sometimes. You know, the Juno Reentry Coalition actually started in 2013 prior to where we're at today, where we have several coalitions across the state, and it really was a group of community members who saw a need, and our first co-chairs, which I thought was brilliant in the beginning and has continued throughout the state, is having that community co-chair and someone from the Department of Corrections. Mm. And so, you know, our Katie Chapman and Brent Wilson were our very first community co-chairs, and actually all three, or Terry and I, were involved from the very beginning. And just 2 years ago, the state decided this is an excellent thing to have in our state to provide all these stakeholders and really find where are the gaps, where can we fit in, how can we get communities to surround their needs specifically for their communities to really robust the reentry process and prior to. So pre-release, post-release, you know, and then having community members come in and do their part.
And I know, because we've been on the radio together before,
yeah,
Kara, that You've had experience in and out of prison. And I think it's a wonderful combination, because I should mention that your co-chair, Ron Shriver, is a security, is head of security at Lemon Creek. Is that correct? The security guy.
Yes, I am the security training sergeant at the Lemon Creek Correction Center.
Okay. So what a perfect combination. And then, Terry, I know you bring decades and decades of social service, substance abuse treatment. And it's like having the three of you here really combines a number of different skill sets. So indeed, before you began, there was very little. Somebody walked out of jail. They were done. And they had no housing. They had no job. Perhaps. They may not have had anything. And, you know, I must say, common sense would tell you, frankly, that a society that allows that to happen is totally asking for it. Because you're putting somebody in a situation where they are, they have a criminal record. People don't want to hire them. And they have restrictions anyways if they have a felony, right? There's driver license, is that still today?
Yep.
Driving license restrictions?
There are several collateral consequences of having a felony on your record, not just for the person. And as a formerly incarcerated person, you know, I can attest to this personally. You know, it doesn't just affect myself, but also my children and my family and my community. We didn't have those resources, very little resources prior, although, you know, they were very scattered. And so part of the coalition is really to bring those resources together that we do have and then elevating that, because at this time we're taking complex social issues in our communities and putting it all in the Department of Corrections to fix and blame and put all of these things instead of having our communities kind of rise up and support, you know, mental health and substance use disorders and poverty and homelessness and all these things that we now criminalize are now able to come together at one table with stakeholders and create solutions together. Being a community co-chair with the Department of Corrections, I never thought in a million years I'd be sitting on several boards and committees and coalitions, you know, with people that work in these positions, and they're some of my greatest allies and I call friends today.
Yeah.
And so that's really the idea, too, across the state, that Juno had the foresight of having early on to merge, you know, these unlikely, for lack of better words, you know, characters together who are doing this work on many sides, bring them together, and it's just been an incredible journey.
Well, I think, Ron, you couldn't help it. How long have you been at Lemon Creek? May I ask that first?
I've only been there 5 years.
Well, 5 years. Have you been have you worked in prisons before that?
No, this is the first prison that I've ever worked at.
Okay. So you really slightly predated the Reentry Coalition starting. And, right, because you said it started in 2013, right about that same time
right.
You came in. But it must also be common sense to you, because you're on the inside, and to see the population that ends up in prison, it's obviously completely biased. Non-white males, Native males, a disproportionate number of Native males, a disproportionate number, in the U.S. at least, of Black men. What is it, like 1 out of 5 Black males will end up in prison, I think I read? I mean, that's outrageous. And really speaks to some of the problems we're facing with poverty, discrimination, and in this country. And so you, of course, are seeing people coming in who are from very disadvantaged backgrounds, and then having them do, I guess, would you call it hard time? I don't know. I mean, in jail. And then getting out, I know I'm talking to somebody who works at Lemon Creek. This must feel like you're going full circle and really doing the full job.
I see a lot of individuals on their worst day of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And as a correctional officer, being a correctional officer, it's probably the hardest thing is seeing someone on the worst day of their life, seeing them get better and get healthy and get their mind right, and then walk out the back door with, like, what I think Kara's referring to is essentially nothing.
Yeah.
And without hope of becoming something better.
Yeah.
And I think that's the hardest thing that I personally deal with as a correctional officer. And I see other individuals who are in the system that leave our institution needing that hope. And I think part of the Juvenile Reentry Coalition's job is to help find that hope and set people up for success.
Absolutely.
And speaking of success, I'm wondering, other than you personally, Kara, could you talk about some of the successes of the Reentry Coalition? Who'd like to start? Harry.
I want to start with the I want Ron to talk about the InReach program, because that's something that I think is one of our greatest successes. But I, part of the InReach program, or I don't know if it's part of it or how it's related, but the Prison Garden Project got started this year, and the Reentry Coalition helped a lot with that. There was a greenhouse that had been built previously, and there were a few beds in a garden area, but there wasn't much in terms of resources to, like, seeds and tools and fertilizer and good soil, and it was sort of limping along. And one of the education coordinators out there at Lemon Creek said that that would be one of her goals and one of her dreams, is to see a robust garden. So the Reentry Coalition jumped in and raised some funds to buy some tools and to buy some fertilizer and seeds and things. And then somebody from the community donated a tiller, and that the people out at Lemon Creek were able to till up the front yard, their big, huge front yard area, and they're planning to grow potatoes and flowers next year, right? And the good thing, it's not just that we were able to raise funds to make that happen, but we, in my opinion, we were able to give some meaningful activity, contribute to people.
Sure.
Having meaningful activity while they're inside, which is really helpful for healing and getting your head straight. But also it gives people some experience and some skills in tending and following through. And, you know, you have these lives, these plant lives that you have to keep alive. So there's some responsibility. And all those things together, I think, made it a really one of my favorite projects. But we should let Ron talk about the InReach.
Just a comment on gardening, because you're absolutely right. It's probably one of the most therapeutic things you can do is to grow plants, have a garden. And so it's really two for the price of one. I mean,
exactly.
They're getting some skills.
Yeah.
They're out of doors. They're making things beautiful. But it's so rewarding to garden, and so mellow.
And they're looking at donating the food that they make, eating it themselves at Lemon Creek, but also donating to the food storage or food banks and possibly Glory Hole. So, I mean,
that's lovely.
Things are
run.
InReach.
So as a security training sergeant at Lemon Creek, I was asked to somehow develop a program to educate volunteers from the community to come into the institution and essentially kind of give them free reins of the institution and let them kind of go where they want to go and do the work that they need to do or that they can provide, whatever services they can provide. So with the assistance of another officer, we developed this educational program to prepare volunteers to come into the institution and give them a little bit of experience and let them know what to expect. And we call these volunteers VIPs because to us they are very important people, and we want them there as much as possible working with people, because there just aren't enough correctional officers or probation officers or or just DOC personnel in general to spend enough time working with individuals to make them better prepared to go back into the community.
We need
these volunteers to come in and provide services.
And as the Big Brothers Big Sisters program knows, that having healthy adults around, in fact, there's something called a therapeutic community. Now, I realize there's a disproportionate number of people who have committed crimes compared to the volunteers and other healthy people at Lemon Creek, but just having contact with people who lead normal, sane, healthy lives, and they're like role models. It's pretty amazing. Tell me some of the programs that past and present and future that is in, you know, part of the InReach program.
So we have volunteers that come in for a healthy mind and meditation class. There are some other volunteers that come in and teach finance classes from the banks, Northrum Bank, to be more specific. We also...
Job Center.
The Job Center comes in. We have volunteers that come in and are teaching carving, native carving classes to the men.
Housing?
Yep.
Yep. We have individuals from the housing.
Yeah. What is that called? I forget. Tamron, where do they work?
But to help people get housing
right.
when they get out.
Yeah,
and what about Terry? I think you mentioned that there's expressive arts, trauma informed expressive arts.
I went and got training to do that. So that's going to be my VIP program that I do when I get that a little bit more refined. But yeah, that's trauma-informed expressive arts therapy is
excellent.
A good one.
I just want to mention something about this incredible program, and it's one of a few that Lemon Creek Correctional Center has really taken ownership of, and I think is just an incredible asset to our criminal justice reform, both inside and out. So I just want to give you an idea of what that looks like. Some of the volunteers that have gotten their VIP badges, I'm one of them, but there's also Clinkett and Hyde of Italia. She goes in at the Second Chance program. But there's formerly incarcerated people who have been gone through the security training, and we're able to go into the prison in a whole different capacity like that's never been done before. And so as someone who's formerly incarcerated, myself, there's, I think, four others that can also do that. And what that looks like is, and it never gets normal for me, I go into the prison, I show them my badge, and they basically wave me in. You know, I'm formerly incarcerated. I have my own radio, and I can go in. And a lot of times, a lot of the programs are for men. And so women, you know, we have women in Lemon Creek Correctional Center. I'm not up there as much as I would like, but when it's needed, I can go right in. I mean, within 5-10 minutes, I'm in the back where the women are, you know, in their own dorm, or if the chapel's full or whatever it is. I mean, we could just go in and chat. And that does not happen in any institution. In fact, when I've gone up, traveled, I've been to most prisons in the state of Alaska recently, and I can utilize that badge anywhere.
Oh.
And so I've been to the Anchorage Complex, Spring Creek Correctional, Highland Mountain, you know, Wildwood, Goose Creek, I mean, wherever. And so it really is setting this forward action for other institutions to understand that peer support is so crucial, and we can have a safe, you know, place for formerly incarcerated persons to be able to go in, and whether that's speaking on reentry, whether that's speaking on maybe mutual aid groups, you know, recovery groups, 12-step groups. Sometimes I might go in on a prison ministry. You know, I mean, just a vast array of things that we can be going in to speak on a peer level and be able to kind of bridge those gaps, you know, or share our stories, or give that hope that if we can do it, you can too.
Wow. Ron.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just want to add on that real quick. The peer support that CARE provides and a few others provide, it's so important because she can relate and others can relate to those who are incarcerated better than I can. I mean, I can sit there and talk to them till I'm blue in the face and say, you can do this, you can leave here, you can be a better person. But I've never walked a mile in their shoes,
yeah.
You know, and Kara has, and so many others have that are part of this VAP program, who can come in to the institution and say, no matter how many times you've been knocked down or knocked back, you can be different this time. This time can be different, and let me help you. Let me meet you at the back gate,
mm-hmm.
and let me take your hand and let me walk you through the steps. Mm-hmm. I can help you get there. If you are fully committed, I will walk you there. And Kara has done that so many times, and we're hoping, you know, I've like I said, we're hoping to build almost an army of individuals
Absolutely.
Who are willing to be at the back gate mm-hmm. and take someone's hand and say, let me help you to the next step.
And would you want that only to be people who are formerly incarcerated? I'm just thinking for my listeners.
There's a specific role for that. There's others. There's a ton of VIP volunteers.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
It's not just, you don't have to be formerly incarcerated. I mean, we're looking for...
No, I understand that. But you were saying somebody who almost sounds like a mentor, an individual mentor who will help
you
through
this. We have those,
yes.
Yeah.
You
and
do.
One of the things that's happening in the community along those lines is the recovery coaches have formed, and this is based on McShin Foundation and how it's a peer, basically a peer support method for working with people in recovery, and she knows, she can explain it better, but just to be clear that it's happening, and we're developing a whole cadre of people that do have lived experience, but who also don't have lived experience, but have passion for wanting to help and be mentors too. So I think the reentry coach or the recovery coach, however you call it, is there are definitely people that are forming and being trained, formally trained in Juno to go be that person that meets someone at the gate and helps them get their first cup of coffee on the outside and gets them settled into their housing and it helps people go to stable housing instead of maybe their dealer's house where they maybe in a previous life would have been their only option was to go back to their dealer's house for sleep on the couch. Well, this is a method that tries to help get people more situated in stable housing and mm-hmm. employment and things. But do you have anything to say about recovery coaches?
Yeah. So back in 2013, when the Reentry Coalition started, we were able to bring John Schinholzer up from Virginia, and he runs several recovery residences. He's also just a powerhouse in the recovery movement across the nation. He also goes into prisons and sets up recovery pods in there utilizing recovery coaches. What a recovery coach is a peer. It's a peer-run model to really sit with someone as a peer, and we celebrate, you know, all pathways of recovery. So if I'm sitting down with someone, you know, I've been trained to know that even though I may have gotten to recovery in this way, I'm going to present all the options to them. And there's just a set of guidelines and ethical, you know, measures that continue this process to make sure that we can be sustainable as people in recovery, helping others in recovery. And so we took it a step further with the Reentry Coalition, decided, well, we really need to have reentry coaches with this same philosophy, yeah. with this, you know, same structure and model, because we have a lot of folks who don't necessarily identify themselves as being in recovery from a substance use mm-hmm. or mental health disorder. Uh-huh. And so we want to include everyone. And that's something that I've learned over the years, too, early on. We developed that model in Haven House and with the Reentry Coalition and this recovery community that we've created that, you know, there's so many different ways that we can be peers, but why not have this incredible model that's already working across the nation?
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm meeting a woman at the gate in 7 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Really?
With where I met her was with doing InReach, you know, with the VIP program.
Mm-hmm.
And so during that process, she would not speak to anyone. She was just terrified. You know, she does not identify as someone in recovery, and so she may have been missed in that process, you know, mm-hmm. but because we are all inclusive on that, then now she knows she has a family, she has support, she has people she can come to.
Terrific, terrific. Why don't we take a short musical break right now, and then my three guests and I will be back to talk some more about the experiences people have after leaving prison and what the Juno Reentry Coalition has been doing and what Lemon Creek has been doing to facilitate their reentry into a healthier lifestyle. We'll be right back. Back to Mind Over Matter. I'm Dr. Elaine Schroeder, and with me in the studio tonight is Terry Tibbett, Ron Shriver, and Karen Nelson, who are all on the steering team of the Juno Reentry Coalition. And what we've been talking about are the programs that are going in on inside, generally inside Lemon Creek, to prepare and help people move into civilian life when they get out of jail and not reoffend. So what I'd like to check in on now, we started with some success stories of some of the programs inside the prison. Let's take a look at community programs.
Well, let's say that we have the Juno Reentry Coalition has been responsible for promoting a number of events. I would say you guys can help me remember, but we had
Thankful for Another Chance.
We had an event that you want to describe that?
Sure. So basically, we came in the community and we wanted to have a space for community members and people directly impacted, or just even people that supported or people that maybe had questions, to come in, hear, like, what is reentry? What does that actually look like? And we had probably 8, 9, 10 men and women who shared their stories of success. We had family members. We had food, which is always good. You know, it was just a time for the community to come together, hear what was actually going on the ground level. We can listen to policy all day long and be in these big, you know, meetings and whatnot. But on the ground level, what is that really looking like? And time after time and time, you know, folks were just sharing about, you know, this is what worked for me. You know, I went to the Second Chance program and I lived at Haven House. I was in the, you know, community reentry case management program. I, you know, this housing person helped me. I went to this, you know, this space to find this voucher or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And so also with family reunification, there's a lot of stories there, a lot of children, you know, with family members that are incarcerated, and vice versa, a lot of parents that have children incarcerated.
Yes. I was also thinking we also had the reentry, the Juno Reentry Coalition sponsors a mile of highway for the Adopt-a-Highway out in North Douglas. And
okay.
So twice a year we get anyone who wants to come help go clean up trash along the highway. We also participated in Juno Police Department's Year of Kindness effort. We had a week where we distributed bus tokens to people who may not have transportation, easy access to transportation. That was our contribution. What are some of the other events we've had? Oh,
do you want to talk about the backpack that were distributed? That's one of my most exciting events that we were able to help with.
Right. We were able to, with the assistance of institutional probation officer, we went around and we found individual parents that, you know, are incarcerated who have kids,
mm-hmm.
Who were in need of school supplies, and the probation officer went out and purchased a bunch of backpacks and school supplies for the kids, and the Juno Reentry Coalition came together to help pay for postage, because a lot of the individuals that are incarcerated at Lemon Creek, their kids live somewhere else in another state,
mm-hmm.
and we were able to mail
the
packages, and the individuals that are incarcerated were able to write messages to their kids and tell them, you know, how important they thought education was, and you know, wish them a good start to their beginning of their school year. And it was a very successful, rewarding program that we were able to do and put together.
Lovely.
And a couple real quick things, too.
Sure.
We have every other month, the Juno Reentry Coalition sponsors a community forum, for lack of a better word, a community meeting, and it's always at Northern Light Church. If anyone's interested in knowing about those, they can go to the, they can Google the Juno Reentry Coalition and then find out, you know, when those dates are. But every other month we have these forums, and each forum is hosted by a different work group of the Reentry Coalition. We have several work groups that cover behavioral health and wellness. We have Alaska Native work group, community education and outreach, education and training, employment work group, family support work group, housing work group, and a peer support work group. And each one of those work groups takes a turn sponsoring the community community forum, and it become, that's the theme. So like the first one we did was behavioral health, and we had behavioral health providers come and talk about their experiences, and we had people with lived experience of incarceration on the same panel talking about their experiences with behavioral health, some of their barriers they experienced, some of the successes. And then so each month is a different theme, and so people can participate. People from the community can participate. And then the only other thing I'll say is that we've also done some community panels, and our goal is to get these panels out more into the community. And the panels consist of people with lived experience of incarceration, people who provide services, family members, you know, just a whole array of people who are involved in some way or another with criminal justice or reentry efforts, and then go around and take these panels to present before the Rotaries, the Assembly, the School Board, the Chamber of Commerce, whatever, just as a way to educate the community about the importance of serving people as they come out of prison as a way to promote public safety.
Good, good. Kara, we were talking about success stories, and I was wondering if you could share anonymously, if you wish, certainly, you know, some stories of a, or a story of an individual who benefited from the reentry services.
Sure. Well, one that comes right off the top of my mind is a beautiful young lady who was incarcerated over 13 years in Highland Mountain Correctional Center, which is our only women's prison in the state of Alaska. She was released about a year ago. And she was released early because of the provisions provided in our criminal justice bill, and which gave her a lot of hope. And so when she got out, she ended up at the halfway house prior to her getting paroled. And before that parole, we were able to have contact with her. And she ended up applying to come to Haven House. And through all of those different you know, Second Chance Program, Haven House, a lot of the other stakeholders involved with the coalition, such as Michael Hutcherson and Nadine LeFevre, I never say her name right, with the employment services and all of these services together, because we all meet and we all are so closely connected, we're able to have these personal relationships, professional personal relationships that you cannot just send someone out
right
there. And so this particular woman, she ended up coming to us and terrified of, you know, reentering. And you have to imagine doing over 13 years in prison. And we're talking someone that did every program. She was a mentor inside, has all of those things. But when it's reentered, when you're reentering into society, it is a whole different ballgame, no matter how much training you have. And so that's where the peer aspect came in. And then what, we had a dinner one night at the house, and it happened to be Karen Kahn and Jerry Fox from Pretrial Division. None of the ladies knew that they worked for Department of Corrections. We're sitting around the dinner table, and when they told them who they worked for, they were just blown away, like, oh, my gosh, these people really care.
Oh.
And it just obliterated any kind of, you know, preconceived stereotype on both sides. Now that same woman is working for the Department of Corrections as a data entry state worker.
I love it.
She just sent me an email today, and she has the emblem DOC on it. It's beautiful. You know, I mean, that's really the power of coalition and collaboration and hope and all of it wrapped in one.
And, you know, you brought up a good point, Kara, that I think is really important to know, that the climate at DOC, at the climate at Department of Corrections, is very, very open and conducive to this kind of these reforms. And the commissioner, Dean Williams, has been a pioneer. The commissioner before him, Joe Schmidt, was also a pioneer, and I've heard both of them testify multiple times in front of legislative committees talking about the points I was making earlier, that 90% of the people will be getting out and two-thirds of them will recidivate if we look at the data. And something, whatever the system we've had in place, wasn't working. And so the reforms that the Department of Corrections is undertaking, the courts are undertaking, the Department of Health and Social Services are undertaking, that were passed in SB 91 and continue to be revisited with SB 54. All those reforms have shown in other states to reduce crime, to save money, save the state money, but most importantly, increase public safety. I mean, people in other states, when they incorporate these reforms, they actually see that people are safer in their communities, and it makes common sense. And the idea is to put save your hard prison beds for the most high risk and the most scary people, and then take the people who actually have a chance at being rehabilitated, who maybe are way lower risk for other crimes, and take those folks and maybe the people who have addictions or other low-level problems, take them and put them in treatment and community services and get them on the road to rehabilitation. Work with the people who can be rehabilitated, and that's what other states have done. And, for example, Texas closed three prisons and saved $694 million, and they have better public safety.
Yes, Cara.
Yeah, I just want to add on to that. There's been almost 30 states now nationwide that have passed aggressive legislation towards criminal justice reform. There's a reason for that. You know, it is smart justice. It's smart on crime. Mass incarceration has not proven to give us more public, you know, safety. 40 years ago, it fell in like completely different than it does today. We do not feel safer today in our communities. And so what we're doing isn't working, and I think that's been proven time and time and time again. And also, I just want to kind of add on to, you know, even people with violent crimes deserve programs for rehabilitation. You know, I think there's this false dichotomy between nonviolent and violent offenders, and that language to me, you know, maybe I'm just really deep into it, but, you know, I just want to always reiterate that, you know, everybody, even if you are in prison, we should always be having that dignity and respect as human beings. If you're incarcerated, you're incarcerated. That in itself is traumatic, and that is why you're there. So even violent offenders who are incarcerated, we need to have those programs in place.
Yeah, and I understand that Commissioner Williams recently went to Norway to take a look at the prison system there. And I remember reading an article about the prison system in Norway. And it is very much on the rehabilitation model, not on the punishment model. And it's fact-based, research-based, mm-hmm. and apparently the United States has had numerous commissioners of corrections going over to Norway to take a look at this model. And again, it makes common sense. Any mother or father, I should say, who's raised children knows that harsh punishment without teaching creates troubled kids. And prison, and I used to work in juvenile jail in Seattle. I was a counselor in the girls' unit for when I was in graduate school, and I realized what that environment did for those kids. You know, it was definitely a school for Well, most of the kids that were in there, the girls, were there for prostitution.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason they were there was because they were abused at home. And they ran away from sexual abuse. And there they are in jail with other girls, some much more sophisticated than themselves, learning the ropes.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously I was a counselor going in, but the services for these girls was very meager. This is decades and decades ago. I hope and pray that there's been criminal justice reform in the state of Washington. I'm sure there has.
Yes.
I'm sure.
Good friend.
And it's probably a different world if I were to walk into that same jail, same prison, with teenage girls. Hopefully it would be a completely different setup. And
mm-hmm.
they'd be like in Norway, in homes, in cottages.
Yeah.
And basically, even I think for adults, they need to be reparented in a sense. Many people who end up in jail or in prison did not have the advantages of good parenting. Not everybody, but many.
Right.
And the role models that you are providing with these services that are going on in jail, what's it called?
In reach.
In reach. You know, are absolutely perfect. So I've read about the Justice Reinvestment Initiative model. And is that what you're, is that based on what happened in Texas, or what is it?
Texas and other states. So the Justice Reinvestment Model is basically what we've been talking about. It's a national movement. Judges, police officers, legislators, corrections folks, health and social services folks all got together. Not all in one place, but over the course of time have started introducing these reforms that have shown these results. And it was Jerry Madden, who was a Republican legislator from Texas, made the point that we have to start differentiating between the people we're mad at and the people we're afraid of.
Ooh.
And so people we're afraid of, you know, a violent, maybe people that do have certain psychopathic or sociopathic tendencies need to be kept away from society, people who maybe can't control themselves in certain violent areas and all sorts of things. But there are a bunch of people that are traditionally being incarcerated over the last few decades that society has deemed they're mad at, and those would be the addicts, people with addiction
yeah.
disorders, and you know, petty crimes, people who are low income or who experience poverty and steal in order to survive. I mean, those are people that are likely to be rehabilitatable, and so
mm-hmm.
the idea was you take the people who can experience rehabilitation, who are likely to be to experience rehabilitation, and get them the rehabilitation services, like I mentioned. And I think that it's important to know that once these started happening in these other states and they started showing the reforms were working, Alaska jumped in, and it was forward-thinking Alaskans that really pulled this together. And Senator Coghill in our state, who's Republican legislator from Fairbanks, North Pole, one of the two, and he was joined with a team. It was a bipartisan coalition of people who have put the efforts together and have been working on it for the last several
years. How great
is
bipartisan? That's really good.
It's been yeah. bipartisan, yeah.
And, again, back to the common sense, I think if anyone actually spent a couple of days in the kind of jail I was in, and I have not been in Lemon Creek, so I can't speak for that, knowing that the population that enters has probably already experienced trauma. And then I noticed very clearly that the girls were being re-traumatized
Absolutely.
In jail. And I'm sure that's true for all prisons.
And it's hard to get better when you're experiencing repeated trauma. And they say that it's sending someone who's low risk for, like, a lifetime of crime. So say someone has an addiction to pills or heroin. Maybe they're not likely to be in jail have a life of crime. But when you put that low risk individual into a prison where there are a lot of high risk individuals, it's basically sending that person to criminal school. It can be. and the people can then develop skills that are more they wouldn't have developed if they had been treated more appropriately in the community with substance abuse treatment or mental health treatment.
Yeah, and then in prisons without any rehabilitation services, if somebody's in a time capsule, you mentioned the woman who was in prison for 13 years. I can't begin to imagine what it would be like if I were institutionalized for 13 years, away from everything that was going on, away from life experiences, and 13 years of my life was spent in a situation that was horrific, absolutely horrific. And it would damage me so much that when I came out, I can really, really empathize with how hard it would be to get your life going again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're really fortunate to have Highland Mountain Correctional Center that has some incredible programs for our women. But I just want to remind everyone that there are women housed across the state in other prisons that are men's prisons, and so they're geared for men. And that doesn't mean there isn't support there for women, but it's very little. Mm-hmm. It is very traumatic. There's things that sometimes when we're talking about women in prison, we always think of Highland Mountain, which is geared for women.
Yeah.
And so I just want to throw that out there because it's something very dear to my heart, something I experienced myself and watch others. But also, talking about the prisons in Norway, I actually spoke to Senator Kelly, who went with Commissioner Williams on that trip, and he was just like blown away. And I've seen a lot of the films and different, statistics and the actual rooms. I mean, you're in a room, you're in a bedroom, which is very similar to Highland Mountain. You actually have rooms that you live in. You have your own key to your room, and you're able to have community there in a way that isn't in other prisons. I just want to say, though, that our Department of Corrections, I've watched it with my own two eyes, the shift that's happened. It's really incredible. Even in some of our maximum security prisons, such as Spring Creek Correctional Center, they've actually cut down the number of people in solitary confinement, which, as we know, is torture.
Yes.
And so, it is incredible to watch the shift. We have so much more work to do. We have so much more work in the community and ground level, but we're doing it. And I don't know if we could ever feel like we're ever doing enough. I know I never feel like I'm ever doing enough. And I know a lot of people feel that way, but we are making progress, and we all have to keep that open mind on all ends, that if we want people to think that we've changed, we need to also see that other people are changing as well.
And is that going on right now with the debate and the movement around criminal justice reform, that started with SB 91 and now has been reconsidered? Does it feel like the bill is going backwards, or?
I think there's a longer history than that when it comes to criminal justice reform in the state of Alaska. Senator Dyson, and some of these pioneers who mm-hmm. had this early on. When I came on board, it was SB 64, maybe like 4 years ago, I would say.
So
this has been, people think, this just happened overnight and nobody knew about it. The facts are this has been going on for a decade in our state.
Oh, good.
Been.
So we're slowly moving forward. Maybe a little back, but
five
a little
steps
forward.
Four steps back. It'll take sometimes.
No, five steps forward, one step back.
Yeah, there you go. There you
one
go.
Step
sorry.
Back. And probably some of the issues have to do with the opioid epidemic and people confounding the fact that crime rates increase because of the horrible crime that Purdue Pharmaceuticals committed, which was to put OxyContin on the market illegally, essentially, and then our heroin problem. So I see that we've got some more comments that you want to make.
Well, no, just on that, I know that Ron wants to say something, but just I want to tag on to what you just said. And actually, the research shows that crime rates have been rising, violent crime rates have been rising steadily in Alaska since 1986, and property crimes have been rising steadily since 2014. Both of which happened before SB 91.
Mm-hmm.
There are other. It's too soon to tell what the effects of SB 91 are, either positive or negative. You can't do research to find trends in this short of time.
Yeah.
Plus, 40% of the bill hasn't even been implemented yet. So we're only seeing 60% of SB 91 being implemented. So until it's fully implemented and until you have a couple years to look at the trends, you can't really make it that assumption that the crime rates are a result of SB 91. And the last thing I'll say about that is that I forgot what I was going to say. So that passes. Did you want to say?
Were you going to say something?
I can say something, certainly. You know, just optimistically speaking, Senate Bill 91 has done tremendous things for the community already, whether or not we see it or not. There's great things that have come from it and that are yet to come from it. As we look at in the Department of Corrections, the pretrial unit that is starting to stand up and that will be on board here come in January, a whole nother aspect of reentry services that are going to be provided to the communities.
Pre-entry services.
and additionally, as we move forward, we look at what opportunities will be provided to are currently incarcerated and those that are returning to the communities as far as treatment goes. I see things that are going to happen in treatment. Hopefully we see this money being reinvested in treatment and we see people getting help and moving forward with their lives and being productive citizens that we can all be proud of.
That is a perfect note on which to say goodnight, because our time is running short, and I want to thank the three of you for coming in tonight. I want to thank Terry Tibbett, Kara Nelson, Ron Shriver, who likes to be called sometimes Sergeant Shriver, and for your substantial knowledge of both the criminal justice reform situation and as well as what formerly incarcerated people need after they leave jail in order to lead fruitful lives. So thank you for your time and presence on the Juno Reentry Coalition.
Can we give our website?
Yes, quickly.
It's www.junoreentry.com. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
If people want to get involved, there you go. They can
do that. Yeah. And thank you for helping all these men and women who need another chance at a healthy life. And I'd like to thank John and Dolly Kremers for deftly operating the technology that makes this show happen. And I know they're taking off on a trip pretty soon, so I want to wish them well. And, of course, thanks to our listeners for tuning in. Please join us for another edition of Mind Over Matter on another Monday evening next month. Good night.